Welcome to this week's edition of Books and Booze. This is Renee. As always, I'm drinking a whiskey and Coke. We're being brought to you actually by a listener this week, which is pretty cool. Hannah Duggan is sponsoring a few episodes of the show, which I feel like it's important to mention that because this means that you too could give us money to sponsor the show, even if you don't have anything to sell. That's a good thing for people to know, I feel like. Anyway, we're here with Shayna Festa, author of Time of Death. How are you doing? What are you drinking tonight?
I'm great. I'm actually drinking a glass of Moscato. I like the cheap, bubbly stuff.
Ooh. Right. I like cheap and bubbly. Jessica, are you feeling cheap and bubbly this evening?
No, I have... It was lost in the fridge. It's the last of my Young's Double Chocolate Stout. So I'm having one of those tonight, and it's super yum. I feel like fancy pants.
That's one of my favorite beers. That used to be like my go-to celebration beer. Because it's beer and chocolate. What are you going to do?
Yeah. It's a fun time. I wish it had more alcohol in it, though.
I think we'll all have to be like that.
If I shell out big money for beer, I want it to get me drunk, you know?
Just funnel it. If it gets there faster, you get drunker.
There we go.
There you go.
That's what I'm going to do.
I was just telling Jessica before the show, I'm having the worst day ever, which is why when I, even though I was running late, instead of getting a beer, I was like, tonight's a night where I'm going to have a double whiskey.
And tomorrow's the day you're going to have a hangover.
Not really, because it'll be the only thing I drink tonight, so I'll be fine. Anyway. So, Time of Death, zombie.
Oh, yeah.
As you were saying at the in the pre-show meeting, I said that being a nurse kind of maybe, like, qualified you in a certain way for the modern zombie apocalypse novel more than other people. And you were saying how, like, chapter one of the book is actually true to life, and I don't know if you want to share some of that with the listeners, because I think that could be a really great way to get the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. I title my chapters based on their content, and if you know nurses, and if there's nurses listening, the title chapter for chapter one is Code Brown. So, there is poop involved, and like I said before, 90% of nursing is poop-related. You either poop too much, you don't poop enough, it's all clinical. I definitely did use the nursing education and experience in coming up with some great true-to-life moments. So, you know, there's a lot of nonfiction kind of interspersed with fiction, you know. Mm-hmm. My experiences as a nursing student, you know, the first patient that I lost, that's portrayed in the book, except instead of, you know, having a heart attack, this person in the book was bit by a zombie. So... you know, I'm able to sprinkle in a lot of stuff there, and I feel like I have a better grasp on anatomy and physiology than, you know, someone who went to school for computers. So I feel like I can do a good job at really sharing my experience of the human body and translating that into some pretty grisly scenes, you know, what the body does with putrefaction and decomposition and stuff like that.
I think that's interesting, and that's really a perspective that we haven't seen, and it seems so obvious when you say it that, yes, obviously, you know, a nurse would be on the front lines of something like this. They would be that first, you know, when somebody starts getting sick, the first person they're going to be seeing is that nurse, and they're going to be dealing with 90% of the poop in their lives.
Oh yeah.
So I think that's a really smart angle, and also kind of like, duh, why haven't we seen that? You know, I always love when people put their true life occupations or experiences or whatever into their writing, because it really shows that level of firsthand experience. I think that's something that definitely in that first chapter would really set it apart.
Yeah, you know, my...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, my friends and family were such great sports because my characters are really inspired by true, real people. Like, I'm the main character. She's got my super snarky personality, and I'm wildly inappropriate. You know, like, I'm that person that if you fall and break your face, I'm giggling about it. You know? So, not good as a nurse, mind you, but I'm really inappropriate, and, you know, I have zero filter, and my main character has zero filter. You know, my husband in the book is my husband in real life, and, you know, there's scenes in there that he moons me, and, you know, I literally wrote that chapter while my husband mooned me. So it's, you know, everything in there that's not zombie-related is really real people and my real experiences. You know, a lot of my readers tell me that they think the main character is the dog in the book, Daphne, and I have a dog, Daphne, and she, you know, again, poop, totally poop-related. This dog poops everywhere. I wake up and something's sticking me in the back. It's poop. She pooped on my mother-in-law's head while she was sitting by her. Oh, yeah, I sat behind her on the sofa. My mother-in-law said, "What's this in my hair?" And she screamed, "It was poop." So, you know, I'm looking at the little poop nugget right now. She's looking at me, and she kind of steals the show. It's so weird, actually, because you don't think of a zombie book, unless you're thinking like Mark Tufo, who writes hilarious zombie fiction. But generally, the apocalypse is not a funny thing, but I really like having humor in there. And again, the dog is total comic relief. So we've got Team Jake, who's the husband, Team Adam, who's another person in the book, and then Team Daphne. And most people are Team Daphne.
I had heard that Daphne was your real-life dog and that she starred in this. Does she know? Is she kind of egotistical now?
Oh, yeah. It goes all to her head. She was a little snot-nosed little puppy to begin with, you know. And again, I put this in the book. For some reason, I can sit there stone-faced and tell her to do something. Go outside. And she'll look at me. And then I say, go outside now. And the now does it. I don't get it. It's like, oh, you mean now. Okay, I'm going, oh, thank God you said now. Whoa. She's so stubborn.
Oh, gosh, I can relate. We've got two dogs, and they both have their very special personalities. And one of them, my son, who is five, he used to call her name's Olivia, but he would call her Princess Cuteness. And now we've just changed that to Princess Butthead. Because, yeah, we'll try and send her outside, and we'll open the door, and she'll run all the way to the door and then stop right at the open door and sit down because she wants you to pick her up and put her outside. It's like, oh, you asshole, get out.
I am a dog door, and I still have to urge her, go on, you can do it. Go ahead now. And she's gone.
Sorry. We're going to have to cut this out. I just read the note that Renee sends me messages while we're on the show so we can be informed. And she said something about her broken headset is, you know, hurting her ear. And so I was making like a noise response to that message, and I just realized that didn't make any sense at all.
And then you think that it did it again.
Oh, no.
I'm blaming you for that one.
Okay. Sorry, I broke the moment there with being worried about your ear.
What a good friend you are.
ear. Okay.
Earlier today, she told me that she wanted me to live, so.
I did.
She did.
I always want you to live.
Well, then I won't do as a character in my book because I kill everyone. Everyone.
Oh, that's perfect. Do you find it hard at all? Do you get attached to your characters and then you kill them? Or is it just like gleeful killing?
You know, my poor husband, I went inside and I said, Anthony, I'm really sorry, but I have to kill you. He's like, what? You can't kill me. And he really campaigned for it. He would not let me kill him. And the dedication of my book is, you know, to my loving husband who wouldn't let me kill him. So I was, you know, I sat down and started writing his death. I'm like, yeah, I can do this. Woohoo. And then I'm, you know, at one point, originally, Daphne was supposed to die early in the book. And I sat down to write this thing and I cried for hours. And then I said, oh, that's weird. I just got really emotional about the dog, but I was all ready to kill the husband.
See, that would be me too, though. I think I could kill a person far easier than I could a dog in a book, not in life. I would not kill anyone in life.
So, oh, I killed my in-laws. In the book. I should say in the book. My in-laws did not make it.
I'm sure that is the dream of a lot of people. Not me anymore, but mine are wonderful. However, I've known people and in-laws.
Knock on wood, I lucked out myself. They're pretty darn good. I'll keep them.
That's good. Are they sad about their deaths? Or are they okay with it?
You know, at first they were pretty upset. And then my mother-in-law read it, and, you know, my husband comes from an Italian family, like real, true Boston Italians, you know, parents from Sicily or you know, and they, the way I killed my mother-in-law, you know, the weapon that I gave her was just priceless. I'm not going to spoil it, but.
I just love the way that, because we've established that they're all real people in your life, you're like, the way that I killed my mother-in-law. Very casually.
Oh, yeah. You know, I have to tell you, I think that most writers, myself included, must be on, like, the NSA watch list, because the shit that I Google, I swear to God, like, they're stalking me outside with, like, binoculars and waiting for me to blow something up or, you know, mass murder people. You have to research.
Did you hear about, I can't remember how long ago this was, like at least a few months ago, the FBI actually showed up at this family's house because they shared a computer, and the combined search results made it seem as though they might be building a fucking backpack bomb. I can't remember what it was that, like, the first search was, and then it was, like, something else about explosives, and then they were, like, shopping for backpacks, and then the FBI showed up and was like, what's going on?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that scared the crap out of me, because the same, like, you know, like you said, you have to know stuff. I've Googled what a dead body smells like at least 4 times, and I actually know what a dead body smells like. I've smelled one.
Me too. I mean, I Googled recently, how long would it take someone to suffocate in a dryer if you stuck them in there? How to get, like, the biggest blast from a bomb detonation. I mean, I think our government must think that I belong in a rubber room.
That is so funny.
You're both a terrorist and a serial killer.
Oh, yeah. You'll see my name someday. Yeah. Oh,
how to make math.
Because, you know, when I Googled last night or the night before, drugs to put people into a coma.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it's a problem. See, I don't write any horror stuff, so I feel like I never have to Google anything too suspicious.
You just probably download a lot of porn.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's so normal, you know? Everybody does that.
Not the stuff that you download, Jessica.
Yeah. I was going to say, just on the porn. legal and what's not, but.
Oh, my gosh. That is so funny.
So I feel like we all learned something here this evening.
Mm.
About Jessica.
Everyone
knows. I'm saying it's weird because you're such a shrew.
I know. I am.
Oh, man. That cut deep.
You know that. I can't believe everything you hear on the internet.
Is that so? Because I heard today that ramen noodles give you cancer.
They better not. I have full body cancer, if that's true.
Wait a minute.
My head when you said that.
So you mean that Nigerian prince is not sending me my $100 million?
He is not. I am so sorry.
Son of a...
Internet.
Now, if it's a prince from Ghana... That's different.
Oh.
Nigeria,
man, I quit my job. You know, I'm just kidding.
Irish lottery, yeah, it's all very exciting.
Funny how the UK lottery informs their winners by email.
Yeah, no.
It's just old people. I used to work at a bank, and bless his heart, there was one elderly gentleman that would come in like once a month at least with a new email saying he'd won some kind of random lottery that he didn't enter, wanting to wire money to a stranger. And we're like, no, we're not going to let you do this, sir. You have to stop now. It was so sad. They break my heart.
Just the email. I mean, there should be a level of brains, like an exam. You are not smart enough to read email.
Exactly. You do not get to have email anymore. It's over.
No.
What's really funny is I have a family member who didn't get the internet until they were in their 50s. This is recently. And she had heard so much about all the scams and all the weirdness, and like people hacking your Facebook and hacking this and hacking that. She had a good enough understanding of how the internet worked to not be completely paranoid every moment she was on the computer, and she ended up just giving it away. It was like ruining her life.
My mother is horrible. I mean, I get those things, like, she'll send me an email, like, Shane, oh my God, this is happening. I can't believe, make sure you don't go get gas because there's somebody going to sneak in your car and kill you when you're in your gas. You know those, like, chain emails that you send? Like,
right.
Mom, it's not real.
Yeah, don't flick your eyes or his headlights are off because they're going to be initiated into MS-13.
Yep.
They're going to kill you.
Yeah, that's one too. She sent me that one. And my dad just learned how to Google the other day. This is the extent of my dad's knowledge. And it's not even Google because he doesn't get that Yahoo and Google are like browsers, you know, search engines rather. So all he can do is Yahoo on it. He can turn it on, and he can click the E button for Internet Explorer, and he can type stuff into Yahoo. That's all he can do. And it's always the same stuff. It's always looking at pictures of RVs or boats.
Oh, oh my gosh. That is so funny. Bless his heart.
Oh, old people.
I'm letting my Southern show because I keep saying, bless their heart. Bless his heart.
Am I letting my Boston show? Asshole.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm sorry. You're a wicked asshole.
Perfect.
Oh.
Good. Well, I did want to mention your book. It is, you are writing a sequel, right?
I am. In fact, I just turned it into the publisher this week, and they gave me a release date of December 9th.
Congratulations. Oh, wow. That's
and
2 days after my birthday. I'm very excited.
Well, then it'll have to be like this joint party when I do my launch party. I am. For book one, I threw like a virtual launch on Facebook. I gave away like $900 in prizes, and like 500 plus people showed up. So, I have to figure out a way to make this one bigger and better. So I've already started planning it, 2 months ago to get prizes and stuff, because you know, I like to give things away, but I don't want it to be all about me.
Yeah, that's awesome.
But that's what we do. Sorry. Keep interrupting. That's one thing we did want to talk about, though, is like an actual successful virtual book party seems very rare.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I actually put a little publication out on Amazon from my experience and the steps that I took to get there because, you know, you have two sides of the fence. You can do it yourself, and the people who will do that are like the massive, massive control freaks like me who cannot give up the control to someone else. You know, if it goes wrong, then I know it's my fault. And then you've got people who just can't take something else on and want to focus on other things, so they hire someone to do it for them. But when I was looking into hiring someone, I said, what's the max number of people? What do you usually do? And they said, you know, 2 hours. And, you know, we've gotten upwards of 200 to 300 people. And I thought, yeah, you know, 2 hours, that's not a lot of time, especially in Facebook world, because people are on, they're off, they're in a movie. What if they go to a movie? There's 2 hours, your party's over. So I did a 10-hour party. Next time I'll probably get Depends. So I don't have to run to go tinkle, but I did a contest like every 15 minutes and gave away a ton of prizes. So it was really, really worked out. And I actually put the publication on. It's free yesterday and today, I think, for another couple hours on what worked for me, what didn't work for me, and the steps I took from inception, I'm going to throw a party, to my party's over.
I'm buying it now with one click.
You are.
I am. Yeah, so I think that you may have hit, like, the most important thing right there, though, is that I've seen people, like, okay, you know, everybody has, like, there's, like, the new generation of direct sales, like purses and nail polish stuff and cleaning stuff, like used to be Tupperware or whatever. So I've seen a bunch of people that they'll have one that I'm like kind of interested in, and they're doing a Facebook one, and I'll be like, yeah, I'll do that. And they'll be like, okay, it's Wednesday at 6:30. And I'm like, well, or 7:30. It's like, well, I'm doing the podcast. They're like, oh, well, it ends at 8. It's like, well, that's when I'm still doing the podcast that time. So especially for something fun that people would actually really want to go to, if you give them the opportunity, like if they get on Facebook at work or if they have to wait until after work or whatever, that does seem like almost intuitive. But you're saying that even people who like did it professionally were like, oh yeah, 2 hours.
Well, that's what they do. They run the party for you for a couple of hours. Not to knock them, because authors have used them and really enjoy their service. And it's nice, you know, if I could pass over control like that and not be such a perfectionist, I gladly would, but I can't. That's just, yeah. I'm type like AAA personality where, you know, I'll pick out a little pixel in something and nitpick it to death, because if I'm putting my name on something, then I want it to be perfect. So I want to put my best foot forward. So, I started thinking early, I planned early, and I must have promoted this thing, you know, a couple hundred times on all the different social medias, but I didn't do it in such a way that was join my party. It was, you know, okay, join my party, my book's coming out, and then a little bit more information building up to, you know, like I'm going to be giving away this prize. And then I announced the grand prize, which was a digital ebook collection of over 90 books from 50 plus authors that was worth over $300. So, you know, like it's getting people engaged, like, oh, you're giving away that? Well, I'm interested. Sure, I'm going to click go. You know, so when I talk to people and I ask them, how did your party go? They said, well, only 50 people showed up. And, you know, and I asked them, well, how did you advertise it? How many times did you post it? They said, well, once or twice. And, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all that, it's in the moment. For me, I've got across the different social media networks, I have 20,000 people that I see, you know, posting stuff all the time. So if my eyes aren't looking at it at that right then and there, I'm not going to see it. And a lot of other people aren't going to see it if they're, you know, not looking at their screens right then and there when you post it. So it's all about, you know, not spamming everybody, but still making sure your message gets to the most number of people.
Yeah, no, see, and that's the thing I think is funny is that you're saying things that, like, we all kind of know. But I think maybe part of it, too, is that you, every time you turn around, there's, like, an article or a BuzzFeed list or somebody ranting about what you're not allowed to do on Facebook. You know, like, you can't post pictures of your family, and you can't post pictures of things that aren't your family, and you can't promote your book, but you're a writer, so you should at least talk about something about your book, or people can know it. Like, there's a whole thing about, like, the etiquette, and none of it makes any sense. Like, if you followed all the rules, you would never be able to post anything.
Exactly. And, you know, yeah. When they say don't spam your book or don't, you know, market your book on Facebook and all that, I have to be honest, that's where I get most of my sales is social media. Sure, I probably piss a lot of people off because, you know, I'll post something like every other day. And, you know, it's kind of like someone who has a baby and you're really good friends with them and all of a sudden they have a baby and it's like you talk to them and it's baby, 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 baby. Same thing with a book, you know, so my friends are probably like, I don't want to talk to you. You're just going to say book, book. So I'm sure I piss a lot of people off, but the days that I don't market are the days that I see, you know, ramifications in sales.
I like that perspective on it.
I think, yeah, and well, I'm also of the opinion of, like, as long as it's not everything you post, if someone was your friend, shouldn't they be excited about your book at least a little bit, like at least for you? Like, I'm happy for you, even though I don't read. I don't know how to spell, but I'm excited to see you, my friend. Like,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, when my friends post pictures of their kids, I'm not like, ugh, I don't want to see other people's kids. I'm like, oh, it's good to see my friend's kids growing up because I moved away. Like, you know?
Well, do you have kids?
I do. I have one.
Okay. I don't have kids, so I am like, oh, my God, I don't want to see your kids. But if you have a dog, show me the dog. I'm good with it. I look at dogs all day. Kids, not so much.
But I mean, like, but like, as someone's friend, you're not like, why are you posting photos of your child? You're like, I don't really want to see it, but like, it's your child, so probably you like it.
Right. And,
probably.
And the best thing of all is nobody else controls my eyes, so I don't have to look if I don't want to.
Yes. I think that's a really important part. You know, if it bothers you that much, there are easy ways to stop seeing it.
Like, you could just continue to scroll.
Right.
Which you were going to do anyway, let's be real.
Yeah.
Unless it's a dog. And then I'm all over it.
True.
But yeah. So in other situations that call for a certain amount of etiquette and tact, you also review books.
I do.
You do.
Like,
what
in a big,
what,
major way.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I never crossed my mind to write a book, ever. And thought never crossed my mind to write book reviews either. I was sitting there one day and for some reason, not for some reason, I know the reason. I got really addicted to zombies and everything had to be zombies. But my husband's a computer programmer. So everything he reads is C# this, Java that, that's boring. And then my friends would read trashy romance novels. So I had nobody to talk to. So one day I'm like, you know, I'm just going to start a blog. Meh, okay. And I'm like, I'm going to name myself the Bookie Monster. And then I started a blog and I posted a review on a book that I bought. And
I just got the name, by the way, because I'm a complete idiot. I just got it when you said it out loud. I was like, oh,
Bookie Month, yeah.
What weren't you getting?
Well, when I was reading it, I just didn't, like, I didn't, I was like, that's just a combination of words. But then you said out loud, I was like, oh, Boogie Monster, Bookie Monster, I get it.
Bookie, yeah.
Yeah, and I typo sometimes, and and make myself the Nookie Monster by accident. That's fun.
Oh,
don't type that one into a browser. Don't do it. Don't do it. So I posted the blog, my first review, and I mean, my site was horrible. But then 3 days later, I checked my email, and I had 50 emails from authors wanting me to review their books. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're going to give me a book for free to read the book? Wait a minute, this is a scam. What's going on here? I'm like, I had no idea. And I was all like, yeah, hell, I'll read your book. I'll write a review. And then, you know, it went from there. I think in the last 9 to 11 months, I've gotten like 500 books.
Oh, my gosh.
Or requests to review 500 books. So obviously, it got to a point where I couldn't do it all, and a lot of the people that were sending me books were indie authors. I had zero knowledge about the about publishing, literature, anything. So I remember my little, wow, that person wrote a book, they must be a millionaire. So, not even a little bit. So you know, like, I found that I really, really do love the indie author because most of them can really write. It's just there's so many books out there. You know, it's hard to get the needle in the haystack. So I became a really big proponent of helping authors wherever I could, be it marketing their books if I enjoyed the book, writing the review on Amazon, Goodreads, the blog itself. But it got to a point where I was, like, 6 months behind because I had so many submissions and it was just me. So I've now amassed a team of close to 15 reviewers. It fluctuates, 15 to 20. And, you know, I've got some real superstars on the team. So, yes, I'm the booking monster, but the booking monster could not exist successfully if it weren't for that team behind me because they really do support me. And they write great reviews and allows me to pick up more genres too, which means I get to help more authors.
That's
so hello. Then somebody said, hey, you should write a book. And I said, okay. What's this NaNoWriMo Rainbow thing? I'll do it. And I said, wow, I had a book in me. Who knew?
I think that's wonderful. I love the, because obviously it's something that we have in common because you do the book reviews and you help the authors, and our whole idea behind our show that we do is to get to talk to authors and help them as much as we can with our little promotions. Do you ever, I don't know how to say this exactly. When you review a book, are there books that you hated them? And and how do you handle that in a review? Or do you just not even review them?
Well, there's I hated that book and I didn't really like that book.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, and I tell my reviewers this, if you can't get through a book or if it becomes a chore and it's not a fun experience, because this is a hobby for us all. You know, we're doing this because we love to read. You know, we may love that genre, you know, it's our release time. But if you can't do it, then put the book down. And if it absolutely we can't get through a book, then I send an email to the author. Letting them know that I'm very sorry we won't be able to write a review, but then I also give them feedback as to why. So it's not just, I'm sorry, your book has been rejected. It's the reviewer felt that, you know, maybe there were too many characters or, you know, they felt that the book may be more successful if. You know, so we always try to give constructive feedback. And same thing when we do a review. If something's not a 5-star, it's very important that we call out why it's not a 5-star review. Because if you just say, I like this book because of this and this and this, but it's a 3-star book, then that to me is not a helpful review. Because my experience has been with authors mostly, but I know that a review is for readers. However, I also look at a review as an opportunity to provide constructive feedback for an author. Because, you know, this is a craft and a skill that, you know, I think each author needs to hone. So you know, for me, if there's something that you don't like in my book, definitely tell me so I can make sure I don't do it again, or, you know, I can look into it. So whenever we find something that wasn't successful, you know, we'll generally say it would have been more successful if, you know, right. Or it could have gone here. So, and that's something that I end up spending a lot of my time every day talking to individual authors about their books and brainstorming and helping them come up with, you know, if there's a plot hole, how they can fix it, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, I want people to succeed. I believe that it's very lonely at the top. Not that I feel like I'm at the top by any means, but it's lonely if you get there alone. But if you have a great support team or you have friends that you can help take along the way, then, you know, why not? It's not one book that's going to be the end-all be-all. We can all be at the top and have enjoyable books and great careers. So if I can take as many people as I can, assuming that I do succeed, of course. Yeah. But, I failure is not an option for me. I just can't do it. It's not in my DNA. Just like giving up control. Not in my DNA. My poor husband hasn't had a remote control for a decade.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, and I think it's also true, too, that for the reader, when you read what worked for the book and what didn't work for the book, you're making a more educated decision about the risk you're taking.
Yeah.
Like, you might say, like, well, it's 3 stars, but, like, I'm really into this, like, idea, and the person who's reviewing it is like, oh, well, I felt the premise was a little bit whatever, and you're like, okay, well, the premise is what interests me, so I'm still going to buy it because obviously I'm not on the same page as this particular review.
Right. I mean, reading is art, or writing is art, you know, and it's very subjective. So if, you know, like sending a book as an author to have people review it, if it's not their genre that they read, then you're setting yourself up for a failure.
Right.
So, you know, it's definitely a personal taste thing. You know, like for me, I'm big on humor, really big on blood, guts, inappropriate things. I can handle, you know, the topics that take it to the, you know, mature content level, like really bad stuff. But I know that some of my reviewers can't. And the writing may be exceptional, but because they don't appreciate those aspects of writing or of everyday life, it's not something that they want to read, it's going to impact their review.
Right.
Yeah, that's something we've touched on a few times on the show, people that it wasn't that it was a bad book, it's just it was the bad book for them. And and sometimes your casual reader has a hard time discerning between this was not a good book or this was not a good book for my personal tastes. And
right.
So I think a good, honest review with all those aspects in it can really help a reader find things that are going to be right for them, that they're going to have fun reading and enjoy reading because, you know, that's kind of what it's about.
You know, and then as an author, you have to kind of laugh at the reviews sometimes because, you know, I look at ratings as like a test. You know, you want to get 100 at an exam, but I try not to focus so much on the reviews itself because I can make myself crazy. But, you know, the first week or two, somebody put the review up there and it's 2 stars. It's the only 2-star review. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And,
yeah.
You know, the person said, you know, great characters, love the story. But I like a happy ending or something like that. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is a zombie book. You know, so it made me laugh. Like, okay, I'll take it. If that's going to be the negative comment that somebody puts on there, then I will gladly take that one.
As we have established on this show, sometimes even a 3-star review could help you sell a book if the 3-star review is honest and fair. Because maybe what I didn't like about it, I can recognize that other people would, and I'm not trying to fuck over my friends like maybe Tom Pitts thinks that I am sometimes.
Right.
This is such a reoccurring thing on here. Renee refuses to write reviews anymore for any of our people on our show because she wrote one review And it was before he was on, wasn't it?
It was the night before he was on, so he like pounced on it.
The night before he was on, and she gave it 3 stars. She felt she was being fair and honest about it, and then he came on to our show and was hurt.
But even he admits that it reads like a 5-star review, because I said I talked about what the strong points were, but in the end, it wasn't for me. And even this has gone on so long. It was like one of our, around the middle of doing the show, right? So like a year in, maybe.
Yeah, probably so.
So a year later, he comes out with a new book. I have him sign it for me. And he says, good Lord, I hope this gets more than 3 stars. And for the record, that book, it 5 stars. For real, though. I'm not just saying that.
I would just say that no matter what.
No, but it's true. It's true. I'm tempted to write a review and like promote the hell out of the fact that I wrote this 5-star review for Tom, just so he can drop it already. Because it made me cry twice. And it's a book about gay junkie prostitutes, for Christ's sake.
You
know what a lot of people don't realize, and even myself, like I look at a 3-star review and it doesn't evoke a happy response, you know.
Right.
But a 3-star review is, I liked this book.
Yes.
But people don't think like that. You know, they think the 5-star review is, I liked this book. 5-star review is, love this book, I want to sing it from the rooftops. 4-star mm-hmm. review is, I really liked it. And, you know, and 3 stars is, it was a book.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, and this is probably a topic for, like, a whole segment of shows, but, you know, sometimes I question, like the Amazon rating scale and stuff like that, because of that perception. And unless you spend a lot of time doing reviews and it's your, you know, it's the hobby that you choose versus just I read a book and I'm going to put a review on there, you know, you don't pay attention to the real rating scale.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
I always think it's interesting because that made me think about, there's a couple things, right? Because during the show, like if you came on the show and you knew that we didn't like your book, we wouldn't have a good time. So, like, we're either going to tell you how much we loved it or we're just going to find a way to talk around it or something. I'm not going to put an Amazon review that's like, this book fucking sucks, and then have somebody, like, have that author on next week.
Right.
But then the other side of it is even without doing the show, I'm always like, man, like, a lot of these people now are in my circle or, like, just outside of my circle. And what happens if I really piss them off?
I think that would make for a great show, honestly. You know, like, it would be not a debate, but, you know, like, a really interesting conversation to figure out why you didn't appreciate their work as much as they wanted you to, because books are our babies, you know. So to us, you know, they fart rainbows and unicorns. They can do no wrong. The book is perfect. What are you talking about? 10 typos. Oh, no. No, I meant to do that. I wrote that, like, you know, new words, because my book is perfect. But, you know, I think that would make a great show and give some drama.
I've thought about that a couple times. There were 2 shows in particular. I was like, let's have this really dramatic moment. And then it hasn't worked out for us yet.
No good. Well, I'm glad you didn't read my book first then. But I would be fine if you didn't like it. But then again, I work in psych, so, you know, I have that compartmentalization thing going on.
You could have dealt with
it. I thought you were going to say you're just going to diagnose us with something terrible. Personality disorder.
I'm a nurse. We're not allowed to diagnose. We do that in our heads.
Yeah. You just judge silently.
Yeah. We have the look.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Now I'm like, I wonder what she does think of us now. I'm very, like, I'm nervous.
She gets
reading your blog, and I'm going to be like, yes, because now I feel like this is the equivalent of if I gave a guest book about a review and then have them on the show. Now I know you're like, well, I do it in my head. I'm like, oh.
No. No, I have to tell you, I'm pretty chill. I'm really chill and laid back because I get it. You know, like I take a much more laid back move or except for, you know, of course, the things that I have control over. Those are intense. But, you know, like I really don't judge other people. Or try not to. I mean, we're all a victim of it sometime. We've all been to Walmart
right.
and see what they wear. Come on now.
Sure, sure.
You know, but, you know, like, to each his own, and I get it. You know, I've been on both sides of it now, so I feel like I have a better grasp on things, you know. Still, I'm sure I will take something personally at some point, but, you know, I used to take everything personally, and it would get my stomach all in knots. And finally, one day I said to myself, look, you know, you can't control this situation right now, so why are you getting upset? So now I just stop getting upset at things.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I don't know how you do that, but that's wonderful.
except the poop in my bed. That one I'm getting
right.
upset at. Sorry.
I feel like what I was going to say, too, at the beginning, when you're talking about the dog poop situation, I was like, I feel like there's just a lot of shit in your life, like literal. Like, some people are
yeah.
like, oh, well, my life is so shitty, but like you are surrounded by shit at home, at work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's like I can't even say I love my life. You know, like I feel like I don't know. I feel like I'm just hitting accomplishment after accomplishment. I'm happy where I am. So I feel like I'm in a good place except for the pooping in my bed. Not me, the dog. The dog pooping in my bed.
Oh, that really did sound like it was you, though. Like that is a problem in your life, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I was saying before is, you know, my experience is working with geriatric psychiatric patients. With poop, it's, you know, it takes it to a whole new dimension because old people poop. And when I say old people poop, I mean, like, they cough, they poop. I mean, there's just so much poop in general. But when you have a psychotic patient who doesn't want you to come in their room and their defense is to fling poop at you, no good. It's no good.
Man, that's why I was a business major. Okay. People yell at me, but man, I don't have that.
Oh, you're so lucky. Oh, I've had someone like pee in a cup and throw their pee on me.
Oh my god.
Oh. Wow. Yeah.
No,
that's
it's just not
like terrifying.
Oh yeah, it was one of those moments where I thought it was water, and I'm all like, oh yeah. You really got me. Oh, wait, what's that?
What?
Oh, no.
Yeah, so someday when I get old, you know, I'm just going to go crazy because karma, and I'll be putting poop on people.
Probably, yes. I can't imagine that will not happen. Have fun. Just enjoy that. All the time. Sorry.
Yeah, I really at a loss in how to follow the whole like circle of poop thing.
Yeah, you know it is what it is. And it's going back to the book and my family and stuff. We were talking about my family getting killed off in the book. And, you know, one of the main characters at, you know, a certain point is my brother-in-law. So he just keeps calling me, you know, like, you better not be killing me off. Am I still alive? You know, like every week he would text me, like, am I still alive? You know, I'm not going to share whether or not he is at this point. But I will say that I did do a little poop scene with him, too.
A little what?
Poop scene.
Oh.
I don't know what it is. I must be the most immature 37-year-old woman ever because you can tell a joke and I'll be like, yeah, okay. But somebody will fart and I will lose it. Or somebody in a book will allude to a fart, and that's it, I'm done. I mean, out loud laughing. So farts are always funny, and I don't get it. I mean, I don't know why they're funny to me. I guess it's because I'm super immature and, again, mildly inappropriate. But, yeah, you want to make me laugh? A good poop joke.
Fart. So what you're saying is after the zombie trilogy, it's trilogy, right? Or did I make that up?
Well, originally it was just, hey, I wrote a book. Yay, book's done. And then I approached the publisher, and they said, can you commit to 6 books? And I threw up in my mouth, thinking of, oh, my God, 6 books, panic, panic. So I said, well, why don't we start with 3? And it was originally going to be a trilogy, but I had to split book 2 in half, which gave me a whole nother set of issues where I didn't know there was something called, like, middle book syndrome or something like that, which apparently I totally fell into. So now I'm thinking there's going to be at least 4 books. So, again, they still want me to do at least 6. But I didn't feel good committing to it. So I told them I will write as long as the story organically tells me to write it. But I really have a problem. It's one of my biggest pet peeves when people continue to write books because people love reading them, but they're just regurgitating the same content, and they should have ended like 4 books ago.
Right.
Yeah. And that is, like, I think sometimes a writer has to wonder about what they would do in a situation where, like, they're being offered good, like, the good deal, you know? I think that's a certain amount of integrity that goes with, like, I don't feel comfortable committing to that. I'll do this instead because I don't want to end up being one of those people that just continues writing even after the story has been, like, completely run dry.
Right. I mean, and if it's horror, then you can just kill the character. You know, if you stop loving your character, kill him.
True. I don't read George R. R. Martin, but I feel like that might be his policy, right? Like, he just gets tired of something and he just starts killing people.
You know, one of my beta readers, he is so cute, and I'll use your bless his heart, but he is so adorable. He'll read my books, and on Facebook, he'll give me the play-by-play, like, oh, my God, I just read this. Oh, my God, I just read this. And then he said, oh, my God, you're George R. R. Martin. Stop killing people.
it's an apocalypse. People are going to die. Like, I hate to break it to people.
Right? And I don't like when things just work out. You know, I don't like to tie things in a shiny bow and be, like, all wrapped up, like, skip hugs. You know, I like tension. And, you know, Dawn of the Dead was such a popular movie and is the reason why I actually write zombies, because of the fear it instilled in me. So I had to watch it 100 times. And then I just got addicted. But, I mean, it doesn't have a happy ending. I'm not sure I've seen many zombie tales that do have a happy ending. You know, it's
right.
Kind of everything either dies 100% or it's a continuation.
Huh.
I just choose to kill people. And nobody's safe in my book. Nobody.
I just choose to kill people. It was, again, you know, a while back they were saying how, like, oh, all these phone calls are getting logged. I like to think that there's a guy assigned to Books and Booze.
Oh, gosh. Wouldn't that be fun?
Right, like, he's like, like, picking at his nails, playing solitaire on the computer. It's like, I just like to kill people. It's like, oh, shit, what?
Well, that's like, anytime I go into an airport, I really want to say the word bomb. Like, I don't. But it's like, it was that Meet the Fockers movie where he's like, you can't say bomb in an airplane. Bomb, ba, bomb, bomb. I look at my husband and I giggle every time we're in the airport and I whisper, bomb.
I don't know why that particular scene has been, like, the one scene in cinema that has stuck with me so strongly. But, like, you can't say the word bomb anywhere without me going, like, what if I was in the Air Force and I was a bombardier? I don't know why. I don't know why. Anyway.
So next time you're in an airport, you can giggle thinking about me giggling and saying the word bomb.
Right. And if it all just becomes too much to handle, like cough it into your fist so nobody quite understands you.
Yeah. Speaking of airports, I just went up to Boston to visit my family, and I hadn't flown in a while. But now they give you, like, this MRI. Have you been to the airport lately? They make you stand sideways and raise your hands up, and then something twirls around you.
No, but it's like, crazy. Because,
of course,
I'm telling you, I went, because they used to have the spinny one, right? But then I just flew over the weekend. This blew my mind. It was exciting, but it blew my mind. Because I had all my liquids in my baggie. And like, I chose to only bring my phone, so I wouldn't have very many electronics to pull out. So it's fine with my 4-year-old. She also had her little, like, iPad thing to play with on the flight, you know. So I was like, okay, like, bare minimum, I've got my phone. She's got her things for the flight. I've got my little baggie. We're wearing easy to take off shoes. Everything's going to be great. We come up, and they're like, leave your shoes on. Leave your shoes on. There's, like, a guy whose job is to tell people to leave their shoes on. And then, like, you get there, and, like, I start to pull out my baggie, and they're like, no. Don't leave it in the bag. Pull out. No, leave it in the bag. And they rub these things, like they rub the test kit on your hands to see, like, if you've been handling explosives.
Oh, wow.
And then we just threw our stuff on the conveyor belt, and we went through a regular everyday metal detector, and it was over. It was done. And I was like, this is at LAX, which, by the way, LAX is the worst at everything. But not at that. It was totally simple. And I was like, well, that must just be LAX. Or maybe it's just United, because United had their own security, right? Then on the way back, it was the same deal, except they made me take off my shoes, which was funny because they were like the flattest sandals ever and nothing could have fit in them. But
yeah, I was wearing flip-flops and I tried to go through, and you would have thought that I had just, like, detonated something. Like, they stopped. I mean, they came running over.
Like, why is it different? And, like, because I was super nice. I enjoyed it thoroughly. I was like, damn, I should have brought my computer if I had known.
Right.
I was that dink that didn't know about the liquid thing, and I didn't think about it because I've never not checked baggage before, but we were just going out for a couple of days, so we just took one small bag carry-on. And I'm a big hair – I love my hair, you know, so, like, I treat my hair well. And I had just gone the day before to get it colored and bought $40 worth of shampoo and conditioner. And it was a travel size, you know, but it was like 4 ounces, not 3.6 or something. So she starts pulling out my shampoo, my conditioner, my toothpaste, which is like the little 3.5 ounce thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, what are you doing? She's like, these have to go. I'm like, what do you mean they have to go? You can't. At least take them home with you. Don't make them go in the trash. I'm like, oh, there's so much money. And then now I have 4 days where I have to use crap on my hair, like, because I can't buy it again because they'll just take it again.
Exactly.
Right.
Oh, same thing.
And then my husband was like, he was all fine. He's like, ha, ha, ha. They pull out his hair gel. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, wait a minute, that's going to go. So I did not buy hair, like, shampoo stuff, but the first thing that we did when we got there was drive to a CVS so he could get hair gel.
Oh, that is so funny.
Yeah, because I buy stuff that doesn't come in travel sizes, so I had to, like, just go to like, the drugstore and, like, okay, I need some sort of hair product. I put my shampoo and my conditioner in little travel bottles, right? Just like that. I don't even know what brand they were. I threw them away already because I'm never going to fucking use them again. So wasteful.
Oh.
Anyway, we're out of time right now.
I hope my shampoo and conditioner went to a good home.
I hope so, too.
So, thanks so much for being on the show. It was a ton of fun.
It's been great,
again, we're being brought to you this week by listeners like yourself. So send us your money, and we'll say your name on the air. And it is, again, it's Hannah Duggan, and she's lovely. She bought 5 episodes. And then music tonight is an instrumental, Broke for Free, I think is the name of the band, and the song is Night Owl. And we'll be back next week.
All right.
That's the show.
Thanks for having me, ladies.
Oh, thank you for being on. This is great.
I hope I didn't suck ass.